The working mum is the most respected multitasker of all mammals. Here we see her at work, where she has made time in her hectic day to check on her young. It's half term, a time when the offspring of this species are taking a break from their schooling and being watched by others in the pack, or hired help.
Lenka, has Sebastian's cello teacher arrived? Right, and what about Esmeralda's Latin tutor? So after lunch, right, yes, they're both starting tennis at the country club. And have they had their kale and wheatgrass shot yet? Lenka, it's 12 noon. They were due to have their kale and wheatgrass shot an hour ago. Well, with that attitude, I'm going to have to Brexit your behind back to Poland. Now just calm down, will you? I've got to go now. I'm in the office. I'm sorry, what? Would I like to speak to the children? Wherever would I do that? As you can see, there are those that have opted to leave their children with paid childcare. Then, there are also those of few words.
Hello, Archie. You're still alive then? Good.
One thing that defines this unique species is the love for their young, combined with a drive to survive and a better life for their pack.
Hi, and welcome to another fabulous episode of the Sisterhood of Mummy Imperfect. I'm Mummy Imperfect, aka Rena. Now, this week, my Shut the Front Door panel is back, and on the panel, I have two of my BFFs, Rummy and Riva. Now, they are sisters to me in every sense of the word, apart from the fact that we're not actually related by blood. But here, have a listen to what we spoke about today.
So Muslim mums protested outside a school in Birmingham because it was teaching kids about lesbian and gay relationships. And so the school is 98% Muslim, right? And the assistant head teacher is gay. And he told the kids about this. And also they'd read some kids books about parents, about families with like two dads or two moms or something. And so they were protesting about this. I then asked some people, some of my moms that I know, about what they think about it. I'm going to try and play you quickly what okay. They said.
Teaching about the diversity that exists in the world means that children from all families feel included and helps all the young people understand that LGBT people are part of everyday life. So I consider that it's a good thing to learn about that in the school, especially in the secondary schools.
I don't really agree with children learning about homosexuality at primary school. I think they should just kind of like learn about it in secondary school, because if at a young age you teach them that it's okay to be gay or lesbian, then, I mean, I don't agree with it. It's not that I have anything more against anybody who is, but I wouldn't personally want my children to learn about these things.
My daughter is 9 years old and she's in year 4. I don't think at present she needs support in dealing with these type of questions. It's up to the parents. How much they want to explain about that.
Well, my children attend a Roman Catholic school, so I don't know the school's position on teaching that topic. However, my own views are, I think it's best left for secondary school, maybe 7, 8. Let children be children. I like to think I am open-minded. Times have changed, but I am very much a Christian person and believe in man and woman getting married, having children. However, the world has changed, and these things are already on TV with same-sex couples kissing, holding hands, and so our children do, you know, deserve to be aware of the alternative, but I think when they're a little older.
I think the right age for kids to learn about homosexuality is year 3 and above, because at this age they are more mature and their understanding is better to deal with this subject.
So quite a few people said there that they would like it to just be left until secondary school to talk about this. What do you guys think?
You go first, Remy.
I'm quite surprised, actually, with a lot of the views there. I think secondary school is quite late, because I think that, you know, at age 10, 11, I think that's old enough to for children to know that there are heterosexual relationships and there are homosexual relationships as well. Like, for me, secondary school is quite late, and from personal experience of people in my family or people who are close to me, those people have known well before secondary school that they are homosexual and they are attracted to, you know, the same sex. I know that my own child, being 11, he knows that there are men who are attracted to women, there are women who are attracted to women, and there are men who are attracted to men.
And did you tell him that, or did he just figure it out himself?
No, I when the time arose and the occasion arose, perhaps he heard something on the radio, perhaps there was a story on the radio, perhaps there was a story on the TV, and it's just come up. And so I've then picked that up and I've explained that, yeah, you know what, there's, like mummy and daddy, we, you know, I love daddy, but sometimes men love men and women love women, and that's normal. That's absolutely normal.
I know this is going to be so super boring for you, Rina, but because I completely agree, I would even say, like, my children already know that there's, like, men, a man can be with a man, a woman can be a woman, as you can love anybody you want, and you can be with anyone who you want
and
to be with.
They're both under 10, aren't they?
Yeah, like, my daughter's 5 and my son's 7.
Well, so, yeah.
So it happened very, they found out very organically, and it was because I was traveling with work with a colleague of mine who is gay, and his partner came as well. And so when I was like Skyping my kids and FaceTiming, then they would see both of them, and then I would be like, and then you know, I had questions, and I was like, yeah, that's his partner. Mm-hmm. So like, how, you have a boyfriend, you have a girlfriend, and they are so cool about it. And I actually, the reason why I totally agree with you, Rami, is because if you don't find out until you're 11, that is the time when, you know, naturally teasing comes in and all those things come in, and being gay becomes a joke and becomes something to make fun of people about. But if you, from the age of 5 or whatever, it's just so normal, you wouldn't even think to tease somebody about that. And I don't want my kids to tease anybody. Yeah. I want them to feel, and I don't want it to, when I grew up, it was completely a cuss word to call somebody gay. It was like an insult.
Yeah.
It was so homophobic the way we grew up. It was awful. And I don't want my kids to have to unlearn homophobia. I'd rather they just didn't learn it in the first place.
Yeah. I think, I even agree myself, because like with us, you know how you were saying about the TV roms? So it was actually, we were watching Couples Come Dine With Me, and then there was a couple on there, like gay men, and like I think they were like doing like amazing food as well. And then one of them was like, one of the kids was like, oh, is that his husband? What, do men and men get married? This was a few years ago. Can a man and a man get married? And I was just like, yeah, sometimes they do. And literally that's it. And they just went, all right, and that was it.
Then
one of their teachers at their Church of England school is gay, one of the class teachers, and then he actually got married and told them about it, and showed them and everything. And this is year two. And so the elder one, Mini Me One, let's call her, she came out of school, she went, oh, Mr. So and so got married to a man, and I was like, oh, that's nice, and that's it. And then her friend told her mom, and her mom was like, no, it's a joke, no, he didn't, it's a joke. And I'm like, really? Come on, everyone knows that he is, and you're telling your kid it's a joke. It's obviously not. So anyway, I was quite surprised, because it's church school, so you know, sometimes like in Islam it's seen as haram, isn't it? And why a lot of these people, these mums are protesting. But then also with Christian people, a lot of people may feel quite strongly about it as well. So I was like, oh, okay, it's cool, you're talking about it.
I was actually quite surprised, though, sorry to cut you there, about the comments you had on that Vox Pop thing just then. Because I actually feel like, even if people do feel like that, I feel that the society has come to a level of political correctness where people wouldn't voice that. So I was surprised at the amount of people in that who said they weren't happy with it.
This is Tower Hamlets. These are my mum friends of Tower Hamlets. People don't care and they say what they actually feel inside, and there's a lot of different people. And you know, some of it is because of religion. I think like one person was Muslim on there, then one said, you know, I'm a Christian. So sometimes it's that as well, isn't it? It's the religious beliefs make them feel a certain way about it.
Yeah,
our angle is mainly about how we
about kids
when we
right?
think when we think it's okay for kids to know about this. But yeah, and I think we got that covered.
I mean, I think you've got great in that Vox Pop thing. You've got great variety. I'm so impressed.
Well, you know, this is the sisterhood of Mommy and Perfect, darling. So listen, another story that made me get really annoyed was that the Bollywood actress and Arsenal supporter Isha Gupta was called out on social media for making racist remarks about Nigerian footballer Alexander Iwobi. Do you, you know about this story, don't you?
No, I don't know what she said, though. I heard about it, but I didn't hear what
okay.
she
said. Okay, she actually, she put a, like a, what do you call it, like a screenshot of a WhatsApp conversation with a friend that she was having at the time that she was watching this football match. Mm-hmm. And her friend said that this player looked like a Neanderthal and a gorilla, and he obviously hasn't evolved yet. Obviously,
that's awful.
No, I know. And then she wrote, ha, ha, ha. And then a friend was like, oh, yeah, that's why he's on the bench more or something like that. They were obviously getting into the josh and the whatever of, like, football, but that is racist. And then this the actress, she didn't say it herself, but she wrote, ha, ha, ha. She put a screenshot of that phone of that WhatsApp conversation on her social media and later deleted it and then made an apology, which was like, oh, I'm sorry if that seemed racist along those lines.
What an idea. Sorry.
Just completely unacceptable. I mean,
yeah, but I think she actually thought that might have been gorilla before someone told her, and then she took it off.
Yeah, I mean, it's just pure ignorance then, isn't it? So if you're going to have an Instagram account where you're so vocal about these things, and you're going to post a screenshot of your conversation, I mean, how ignorant.
Exactly.
Gee, I mean, if you're a woman of the world and you're reading... you're reading different articles, different publications, you must know, you must have picked up by now that perhaps using the word gorilla is racist towards black people.
But let's all be honest here, ladies, that we know that there is a lot of racism in India, and the racism towards black people is insane.
Yeah.
Insane.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't do that. You the even... from the staring and saying like comments and just being very much like, oh my God, what's wrong with your hair? And, you know, all these things. And, you know, I have obviously been to India 2 times with my black husband and my half black kids, and it was fine. But I think I told you that people were like taking pictures of him and stuff like that. And it wasn't like in a horrible way. I mean, I don't know what they were thinking, but it was kind of like, oh my God, it's a real life black person. And because obviously he's like sticks out like big tall guy. And
but people do that of white people as well, and of people that look a bit different. Because I, on the recent work trips I've been to India, that's happened to all the people I've been with. So I think it's the difference.
But
the fact that those people are different.
That and just but let you know there's always news articles about how like African students there are treated really badly. They are treated badly. It's really embarrassing, to be honest. I feel very embarrassed of it. I don't know what you guys think.
To be honest, I mean, Indian people are very racist, period.
To everyone, isn't it? It's so true.
I think
to each other, whatever.
People, I mean, like, we are racist towards members you know, of our own religion. We speak very casteist as well, which is very similar to racism. So forget, you know, other, you know, Sikh people. We are racist towards other Sikhs who we perceive are in a different caste system. So for black people, for white people, for Chinese people, yes, pretty. I mean, I'm not going to blanket say that, yeah, you know, everybody is, but there is a lot of racism.
Dave.
And people definitely, and I know this from like firsthand, just from my own grandparents. My grandparents were very racist towards black people, from what I remember when I was a young kid. Yeah. I don't think, you know, maybe growing up that may have changed, or their opinion might have changed, but we all, you know, as a young child, I remember my grandparents being racist towards black people. But I don't know where that comes from. I don't know. they were perhaps maybe more racist to black people than they were to white people.
I agree.
I don't know where.
I agree.
I don't know where, why that could have been, or that they've never known to have any sort of, you know, any bad experiences or anything like that. I just don't know why.
Or maybe it's the whole having this perceived notion of what black people are like, and then actually not knowing any. So you've got this idea, you know, you don't actually know any personally, because I think with me obviously wanting to marry a black person and being Indian, everyone was like, what the hell are you doing? It was a case of like not knowing any black families really in that way. And you
I think it's about color, and I think that people in India don't like the associations with darkness. It's to do with poverty, it's to do with supremacy, imperialism, all those things, and I think that's in the back of their head. I think Indian families would still be more accepting of their kid marrying a white person or a mixed race person than a dark black person. And that is really, really sad.
Yeah.
But it's true.
It's literally to do with colour. Yeah.
It is. Very... I think it's about the physical aesthetics of colour. And it's so deeply ingrained that, like, hatred for darkness. Like,
yeah.
You know, that's... I was just casual, like I was just watching this film. I was watching a song the other day from a film which was that Two States, right? So a newish film, right? And in the beginning of it, so in that film, Arjun Kapoor like is marrying a South Indian, and then it's Alia Bhatt, so obviously she's like really fair. And then the mum says, "Oh, South Indian, I look in Gori Chitti, she's not dark." And then they were like, "Yeah, she's fair, she's pretty," and it's like. Obviously, that was supposed to be a joke, but the fact that those kind of jokes still exist in a film in 2018 is pretty sad.
Of course. Hello, have you seen the film Fashion?
That's 10 years ago. That was why it's not.
Okay, it's 10 years ago, right? But that
things have moved a bit, for instance. Like now, I feel like there is a slight movement.
I don't know if they have moved on since. I don't know if they have moved on since then.
No, but I feel like now. People get called out, big stars, if they sign on for like Fair and Lovely campaigns, they get called out for it. Priyanka Chopra had to apologize about it. Deepika stepped back from it. You know, Sonam Kapoor said, "I was young, I did it, I didn't mean to." Whereas at that 10 years ago, people were doing it shamelessly and saying it was good.
Yeah.
Whereas now I think people are a little bit more aware.
And that's
which is good. It's a step, it's a baby step.
And maybe social media is good in that way, because you can actually call people out, and even this actress Isha Gupta, you know, she was made to feel ashamed of what she'd said through social media.
Good.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of the story, but I wonder which audience it was and in which country it was that actually called her out for it. Was it fellow Indians, or was it, you know, she's an international star, was it somebody international that said, actually, you know what, that's not right? I don't know. If I'm going to be cynical, I'd say it probably wasn't fellow Indians.
I don't know, but I can see what you mean. I don't know though, but I was going to ask you though, do you think people in this country are a bit more less prejudiced towards black people?
Yes.
Than India?
Indian people
here.
And I mean, like, okay, there's one thing of like, you're not, you know, in this country it's wrong to go around saying racist things about people, right? But then behind closed doors, then in your own mind, what you think, is that so different?
No, I think in this country it's very different now. I think we've gone beyond even
thinking, feeling those things. I don't think our generation feels things.
What if, because we were all mums today, what if one of your kids wanted to marry somebody who is black in the future?
I have no problem.
Well, what about your parents or your in-laws or, you know, the extended family?
I wouldn't have an issue with it. I mean, I don't. But if they did, then you then have to then educate them. I mean, you can't, I don't want to say that, oh no, they would not have a problem. Perhaps they would, you know. And if they did, then it's up to me to educate them. And it's up to my child to educate them and say, look, no, this is the person I want to marry. Look how nice they are and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, you
But it's taken, but I'll just be honest with you, it's taken me till my 30s to actually get over that fairness hang up myself. So it was obviously in me as well. Like, the don't get, go in the sun and, you know, before your wedding, try and get, have the facial that makes you look fair. Yeah, I think that took me
to had that hang up when I was younger. I've spoken about this on, I think,
I reckon 28 it took me. Like, 10 years I've been out of it. Now I'm, like, actively against it. But I think up until then it was ingrained in me.
You know something? I actually, when I was younger, like, the first time I actually knew about, like, oh, this person's dark is on my 9th birthday. All my family was obviously there. And now some people in my family have got darker skin, right? Like, some people in my dad's family, very fair. Then my nanny was quite dark and my mum was and whatever. But I didn't know because they're all my family, right? And then one friend who came from a birthday party, I was like, oh, that's this person, this is this person. I was pointing out my family from across the room and I went, oh, that's my grandmother. And she went, oh, what, the dark one? And I was like, dark? Who's dark here? What? So that's when I was like, oh, right, okay. And but then, because you know, you grow up and you, when you reach puberty and you're more aware of yourself and stuff, and you hear things like, your sister's so fair and pretty and what happened to you? And then, you know, oh my god, the amount of times I heard that, and I was like, yes, okay, right, fine. Because obviously me and my sisters are all different shades of brown, like, weirdly, so we just laugh about it. But yes, that I had that as well.
Because Indy talks about it a lot, and I feel like she's obviously not here now, but I feel like she's quite angry about it.
Maybe she went through a phase as well, or when she was younger, about wanting to be lighter, and I did as well. But then I have been over that for like 20 years now, and she's been over it for a long time, and we're all very proud of our complexion, to the point where Ritu tried to put fake tan on herself all the time, because she wanted to look like us. And it went all wrong, and then she ended up looking orange. It was so weird. But
Isn't it nice though? If you felt like, you know, because you're in this society where you do see, you know, eventually when you come out of your own sort of family and you start going to college and you start going to uni, you see people that look like you. But had we still been in India, you wouldn't. You would, or you know, perhaps you would, or you would see very a lot fewer people who perhaps look like. Then you might think that, oh wow, okay, I am literally the odd one out here. But being from a multicultural society or whatever, or just growing up in different areas, you know, Coventry, Birmingham, coming down to the south here, you do see other people that look
so many more people.
You see a bit more like, I am in this spectrum somewhere, and I'm comfortable with that, and I'm okay with that. Whereas, you know, people in India, they perhaps don't have that.
Yeah.
They don't have it. And that's one of the reasons why I love India so much. And I've always said I could live in India. And I think, and even the kids, and even hubby, I'm going to call him, not his name, because he might want to disassociate himself from me now. But he even liked it. And I was like, could you live in? He was like, yeah, but, you know, there's just only Indians. Basically,
fair enough.
I think all of us would miss the fact that, like, we love it there, but it's not as diverse as here, and I would miss that. Okay, so I'm just conscious about time, so I'm gonna just go on to the next thing. So I was on Asia Network the other day on Big Debate, so they invited me on to talk about breastfeeding. So the story that they were doing was that that some Asian women end up bottle feeding their babies because they're too embarrassed to breastfeed in public. Now, obviously, there was a lot of people on there saying, oh, you know, I felt uncomfortable in front of my father-in-law or whatever, like this. They wanted me on there because I came from a different place. For me, as you know, because I probably cried about this to both of you, it was a case of not producing enough milk. And at the time, it made me feel like a failure, and because I was so determined to breastfeed exclusively. And we've all had very different breastfeeding experiences. So just quickly tell me, please, your breastfeeding story.
Rami, you've done three.
Oh, okay. So it was a great story. I really enjoyed hearing everybody's sort of take on it. And after Neha's five now, and even after all this time,
Vida's 11, nearly 12. And after all this time, I still do have that pang of, okay, I couldn't do it. I did all three for about a month.
Mm.
And after that, because I couldn't cope with the pain, not necessarily milk flow or anything like that, the milk was there. I just could not cope with the pain of breastfeeding. Mm. And so after about 4 weeks, three, 4 weeks for all of them, I switched to exclusively bottle feeding. And to me, you know, for Veed, it was the hardest. It got better with Mahi and it got better with Neha because I just switched and I knew it was going to be okay and it was okay. But with Veed, the guilt was just immense. I missed it even though I cried about it. I used to cry to you, Rena, about, you know, bite my fingers. I just felt sick.
I saw you breastfeeding him and you were literally like, you know, like everybody in your face and body and every muscle in your face, every muscle in your body was clenched because you were in that
I'm clenched the same now.
I can remember that pain. Isn't that amazing? No. I can remember it. Like when you're saying that, I can remember that because I had that pain for my first child as well.
But you breastfed River, didn't you?
Yeah, Vishnu, I did till he was about 7 or 8 months. But the first month was really hard because it was so painful for the first 3 months to the point that it made me depressed and I felt like I wasn't bonding with him. I couldn't be with him. It was horrible. Shivani's was somehow really was much easier, and I literally kept on going. She was like older than two when I stopped. I was like one of those extreme breastfeeders. Like that was like, she was like, that was her night dummy.
That's nice. It's a nice bonding thing. It's a healthy thing, I think. I wanted to do that, but I feel like, you know, like there was so much help on hand, especially, I don't know if it's this area or every area, but there were so many breastfeeding support workers that would come to my house. Like every day, come over. Come on, let's try latch on. Try this way. This is what you should eat. Did every single thing. I did everything.
I remember you did.
Yeah, I know.
You did everything, Rena. That last time, I felt so awful for you because I remember you saying, "I'm not even going to have a sterilizer at home."
I didn't have a chance. I didn't have anything.
You wouldn't even like have anything near you that would like tempt you.
I didn't have anything, and that's why when she lost 11% of her body weight, we have to go A&E, and the doctor said, I think you need to start bottle feeding, like topping up. I was like, I don't even have a sterilizer. Yeah. I haven't even got bottles, and they had to give me bottles because I was literally crying, saying, but I was so determined. I haven't bought anything. I was like, no, this is what my breasts are for, and I'm gonna do it this time until I die.
But you know what, Rena? I'm telling you for nothing. There is. I wish to God somebody had just said to me, it doesn't matter, for God's sake, just be with your kid, love them, hold them, spend time with them. It's a really hard thing to be a mother. It's that you've got the kid, just enjoy it. I wish somebody had said that to me and not been like, yeah, breast is best. You've got to. It's great. You're not giving them a nutrients, their immune system. They're going to be lactose intolerant. All the crap that you hear. It's not fair.
I know. It's not fair. I did to myself as well because I was like, I'm more clued up about nutrition now. So I would look at the ingredients on the formula and being like, oh my God, what is this crap I'm putting in my kid? Yeah. Like, I just need to give them pure breast milk. And so I felt quite bad about that. And also it's like, you know, like now you see all these celebrities that have lovely images, like photographs of them on Instagram feeding their babies and stuff, and Beyonce is like, oh, I'm just gonna do a performance but I'm breastfeeding my baby just before I go on stage, and then I was like, oh my God, I really want to see someone bottle feeding. I was like, why can't a celebrity be the unashamedly bottle feeding, being like, I'm actually bottle feeding, thanks.
Yeah, I think it's a bit one-sided that, you know, that we know breast is best, and, you know, and I get it, you know, breastfeeding needs its champions as well, because, you know, when our mums were having us, they didn't have this pressure of breastfeeding. And in fact, they had the opposite pressure from what I remember from my mum, who said
I wasn't breastfed. I had cow's milk.
Yeah, it wasn't the done thing because, I apparently wasn't putting on weight. And even though my mum had established breastfeeding, I was just like a skinny child. And little did they know that perhaps I was genetically just going to be the skinny child. You know, So, you know, it doesn't mean that just because you're breastfeeding, then you're just going to have these chubby babies, you know. It's just going to be that it is genetics as well. And it wasn't encouraged. And so that when I couldn't breastfeed, I felt that my mom or my mother-in-law who was telling me that, oh, no, you know, try and carry on. I just felt like, well, you didn't. So you don't know what it's like. And it's really, really difficult. And I really felt the pressure off from them. And I felt the pressure from other people who successfully breastfed, like my sister-in-law. And I felt like I was being constantly compared to them who had waterfalls of milk. And
oh, my God, isn't it? But the people say, I'd be saying, crying to people, like saying, oh, I really am so devastated. I sit there on the breast pump for half an hour and I produce 2 drops of milk. And they'd be like, oh, my God, do you? I just touch my boob and milk shoots out to the other side of the room. And I was like, oh, right, thanks for that. I feel even worse now.
Yeah, yeah, you do feel sort of constantly compared to other people, yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like so one of my sisters had C-section for all her kids, and she feels the same way about not having, but then she breastfed her kids really, really well. But she feels the same way about not having an actual delivery. And I think maybe somewhere it is in us biologically that we feel like we have to give birth to this child naturally. We have to then have it on our bosom and all this stuff. It's in there. It's not only coming from outside, it's coming from inside.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think we feel like to be a good mum, we have to do it.
Yeah.
And recently I didn't know that there was this, you know, that women who have had a C-section also feel like that they haven't had a birth.
Yeah.
And I just think that's crazy. Why do you not feel like you had a proper birth? I mean, I don't discriminate between people who have had a natural birth and a C-section, but I didn't know until recently that was also a stigma that women who have had to have a C-section for their health, for their baby's health, then felt that, oh my God, if I now fail at breastfeeding, then I am a complete failure. It just seems that at all times there is guilt.
And guilt.
And why do we do it to ourselves?
I really feel like that.
Does the child know how to count from 1 to 20 before they start school? Do they know their alphabet? Can they write their name? There's all sorts of, it just goes on from there. It's just never ending. It's just a different subject.
Yeah, but I just feel like I'm glad, Rena, that you had 2 kids and then you had a gap and now you've done it again. Because I bet now you're so much more chilled and less judgmental and more compassionate to yourself as a mother than you were back then. Because when we had I'm speaking for all of us, because I remember seeing you as well, Rami, at this time. I think we found it really hard at that time to have a baby. And I think now, maybe being older, slightly older, I think I would be a bit more compassionate to myself. I don't know if you feel like your experience has changed.
Yeah, I try to share it as much as possible that, you know, my younger cousins that have had babies, I'm like, don't feel guilty. Okay, if you're doing, you know, if this is what's happening, this is what you need to do. Strap your boobs up, take paracetamol, stop feeding, do bottle feeding, or, you know, if breastfeeding's working, that's fantastic, brilliant. But just whatever's happening, go with the flow, but try not to feel guilty about anything.
You know, Rami, I remember actually seeing you on, I think it was on Raina, your second one's, christening, and then I think my 2 kids were both really young then, and then remember, Rami, you coming up to me saying you saw like my baby was in like the bug or something, and you were like, how's she? But more importantly, how are you? Because I really think we should ask the mums how they're doing, because this is like, just, it's so hard. It's not open about, oh, look at your cute baby. You're the one that's been through all this. And I think people forget that you've been through so much physically, mentally, emotionally. It's really hard to be a mum.
And when you're pregnant, you get all this attention. And everyone's like, oh, you're so glowing. How are you feeling? This, that.
Yeah.
Soon as the baby's come, you're just a little dead.
Like,
and you know something? This, when I had the first little mini me, she in the hospital, I remember this. Like, you know, like, obviously, when your husband is, like, so, like, devoted and, like, oh, my God, are you okay? It's the first baby, so excited and stuff.
Yeah.
And I've been having all this attention, through our whole marriage and through the pregnancy. Then I was in hospital for 3 days. I had the worst labor ever.
So he comes to, this is the day we're going home, right? So he comes in with the car seat and stuff, puts it in. He's literally skipping down the road with the baby in the car seat. I am like dragging myself down the pavement 50 miles behind, but I'm thinking, oh, how come he's not even looking like where I am? I can't even walk properly. But it's because, like, you know, you're just like, okay, she's had the baby, lovely. And it's normal to be excited about the baby, and that's the new love in your life, isn't it? But I felt a bit like, oh, all right, this is a.
Yeah. I can't imagine what he was like after number three, because then you probably were like round the corner and he was like torn.
We just went straight to Tesco.
Yeah. You know what? Number three, we were, she was born at 3:15 a.m. We were back home by lunchtime. I think I was actually probably making the dinner. He was like, what's for dinner? No, he didn't. He didn't say that. But we were home by lunchtime and it was quick and just different. But yeah. But I'm more relaxed. I am more relaxed. I try and make life easy for myself. For example, can you believe with the first one, when I used to give her a bath, right, I used to disinfect the whole bath before giving her a bath. No, listen, I used to disinfect, like, put Dettol spray on it, clean it, then fill the bath up. Now, I get, like, a little mug of water, splash it around, and be like, that's good. Yeah. And then I think to myself, and then sometimes the children go, are you not going to wash it properly? And I'm like, look, some kids have baths in dirty streams around the world. You will be fine.
Damn truth. Build your immunity. So, that's what I say.
Yeah, build immunity. I mean, you know what they say is you bring your first child in on a cushion. You bring your second child in your arms and the third child brings in the shopping. You know, it's
so true.
So true. It's like, you know, even like with feeding, clothing, discipline. I mean, I say to Neha all the time, you are the third child. Either you eat this or you starve.
Nobody cares.
Nobody actually cares, because we know you're going to be okay, because there's another dinner in a few hours' time. You are not going to starve. And just, yeah, you just, I just feel sorry for that. I have new respect for my youngest brother. I just, you know, he had it hard. You know, you just, I'm the oldest. I was the pampered one. So, yeah, you just get on with it. It's just, you don't have that sort of, you love them equally, but you are not that sort of new mum anymore. You're not, you know, whatever. You're there when they need you. And genuinely, you are there when they have temperatures and things like that. But you just don't suffer the crap.
I hope you enjoyed that episode of The Sisterhood on Mummy and Perfect. What did you think about all the issues that we spoke about? If you've got anything that you'd like to tell me, leave a comment. Until then, take care. Join me next week for some more real talk.